This is the intersection of assistive, educational, and information technology. Whether it's technology for inclusive classroom learning or tools for community success, technology can promote independence, and inclusive technology has become more available for everyone. Welcome to the Inclusive Technology for All podcast with your host, Mike Murata.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 78 of Inclusive Technology for All. We'll continue on with our series of the audio recording from our weekly assistive technology town halls. This week's episode focused on the mechanisms for virtual assistive technology evaluations and service. We just scratched the surface on this topic, and I'm pretty sure we'll talk about it next week and maybe even the week after as well. So definitely check this out. Hope that it's interesting to you. And if it is, try to join us next Monday, June 1st at noon, where we will talk about this again. So if you can check out the link to register for that at the Assistive Technology Advocacy Center, which is AT4NJ.org. Thanks. Enjoy the episode. Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday version of a Monday afternoon event. And we've really been thrown by this. It's really confusing all of us, but welcome. The next episode of the AT Town Hall. I guess we'll call them episodes. I don't know. The 526 version of AT Town Hall. There's me. There's me on the side. There's me on the screen. This is hosted through the Assistive Technology Advocacy Center at Disability Rights New Jersey. I'm the director there. Hello. How are you? None of these people are here except Alyssa, so they're all about to get voluntold to do something. I don't know what, but there will be work that comes their way. Alyssa, sit back and enjoy. There's no work going to come your way today.
I like it. Oh, good. Cheryl's joining us.
All right, good.
More people coming to the party.
No work for her either today.
Yeah.
So please feel free. We're a small enough group. Turn your mics on, turn your cameras on. Whatever you want to do is fine by us. We have a couple resources that we always point out to people, which is that Remote Access for All document, which is a crowdsourced Google Doc, which is bit.ly/remoteaccessforall. The reminder of the AT Chat website, where all these things end up living at some point, atchat.info. The recording also goes up on the ATAC YouTube channel, but it goes onto AT Chat website as well. So I had some thoughts of today. So here we can start with this because this is easy, but then we can kind of roll into the actual topic that I thought would make sense for today. So does anybody want to share something good that happened, a positive story from the week, some kind of quick tip for success? What do you got? What's anybody got? I had a simple tech success, and it was from our AT Expo, which you see my grid still on the wall.
Yeah.
But our AT Expo, I'm going to fill it with an ed camp, by the way, so that's why I didn't pull it down. But our AT Expo was last week on Wednesday. It was really, really good, really well done. But my biggest thing, and I think I mentioned it in the welcome to that, was I learned how to use Autocrat in Google Sheets, and it is the coolest thing ever. And I normally hate Google Sheets because I just can't be bothered. I don't know spreadsheets and I don't have the energy to learn. But this was really cool. And it was able to auto-generate, depending on the it populated a certificate from the fields people filled out on a Google form that went into a spreadsheet. And the spreadsheet triggered a certificate that automatically filled itself in. And I looked super techie and super fancy, and I was pretty happy with myself. So there you go.
I've been using Document Studio to do that, which is like Autocrat.
Okay.
But I went to the patents when Jessica did those sessions, I think it was Jessica, on data and using Autocrat, and she shifted my mind. So that's on my summer to-do list, is to shift over my screening, my AT screening, which is now a Google form, into Autocrat. It uses Document Studio and does a similar thing, but it'll let us drop it to a Google Doc so that instead of me having to kind of recreate my summary report to type on, it'll stay as a Google Doc of that PDF. So Yeah. I'm going to be living in autocrat world too this summer.
That's exactly my thought of it. It kind of lends itself to our conversation today about avowals and stuff. But yeah, that was my thought right away. I did it for the certificate, but I could see the value of, we ask people to fill in a set framework form or ask them a lot of questions, and that could then in turn populate paragraphs of a summary report and not have to do much of anything.
Yeah, okay, so my new positive story of the week then, because I feel like I spend more time typing reports.
Yeah. Right.
You fill this out, and I'm like, I gotta sit and type this. So that is an excellent idea.
It's
yeah,
really
autocrat.
Cool.
If you go to the Patents Project website, Cheryl, she has both of those sessions posted. I'm pretty sure the I Love Data 1 and 2. The 1 was kind of an overview, but then 2 dug deep into autocrat. And I think she had also had some more sessions they were gonna do. But it was very helpful to see, she was talking more about like behavioral data and classroom data, but it was very easy to kind of see that extrapolation to what I do now is I drop it. And then like, as soon as somebody submits a form, it automatically emails them a PDF of what they submitted. And so I've been using it for the PDF format, but now I'm going to switch and have it just be a Google Doc so that instead of me copying and pasting over the information they submit, which still was a time saver, it's going to leave it as a Google Doc so that me or my coworker, when we go out to do an observation, can just type in that same Google Doc, but the people who submit still get a hard copy.
Yeah. And that's really cool because you can drop it in any folder you want, and then you give certain permissions in that folder for anybody to edit it. So yeah, it could either come out as a PDF or a locked document or an editable document, but it gives you a chunk of that info already, which is
Yeah, and I haven't jumped to thinking about it for evaluation so much like a consented eval process. Right now I just use it for my screenings, but even that's a huge saver because that's a good chunk of what we're doing now because we're doing less consented evals, which is good.
Yeah.
It means that a lot of our people are getting what they need before they get there. I'm sure I'll figure out a way to make it work for the avows this summer too as I dive deeper into autocrat. But
yeah, that's my thought, is what that looks like maybe come the fall when I got to do more avows, and can I use that in some way? Because I'm with Cheryl. I hate writing reports. I don't know if you heard. I hate writing reports. It's brutal.
Yep.
So I can add a little positive from Connecticut. One of the things, it's not a form, it's a tool. So we've been working with our makerspace, Nesset, who is connected to our Assistive Technology Center, and they've been using their 3D printers to make a ton of things for us, like door openers, touchless door openers, touchless little devices that you can hold and when you're out in the community to open things or tap on things so you're not touching them, and also mask extenders. So they've been doing a lot of 3D work trying to address all of the issues that we've identified.
That's really cool. That's great. I had big master plans for my 3D printer that was sitting right here, and then I started to use it and the nozzle got all busted up. So I just got the new nozzle Sunday. So I have to put that back together because I had that same thought, Pam. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to be sitting around. I could just have that thing cranking stuff out while I'm working and just keep feeding stuff into it. And well, so much for that big master plan.
Mine's
also fell apart.
Mine's currently holding a stack of evaluations that needs to be written up.
Oh, well, that's nice. Well, mine right now is holding
some extra desk space instead of actually printing things.
Oh, that's so funny. Other quick tips or successes before we jump into the actual question for the day? Oh, I have a question too. Oh, I have a question. Well, here, I'll give you this first. I gave you the link to it. This came up yesterday across my Twitter feed, and it is a superintendent here in New Jersey who posed a list of 91 questions that need to be answered before schools can reopen in September. And this is pretty intense. We start thinking about what are the plans in September and what is September going to look like for school. I'm not even talking about AT yet, just talking about it in general. education. This was a really kind of well thought out list, and I hadn't seen a list like this so far, and so I wanted to make sure people had it so you guys could check it out. It's a shared Word doc, I think, in Google Drive, but I gave you the link to it. It's bit.ly/91questions, and that's something that he is posing, this person was posing to our governor and our Department of Ed of how we were going to do things. So I thought that was interesting to share. But really, the big thrust, we had talked about this last Wednesday in AT Chat, that maybe we should have a conversation about what AT evaluations look like and AT services moving forward in this kind of who knows what world of virtual or mixed or hybrid or blended or whatever it is. And then Barbara dropped this question on the Quiet Listserv on Saturday, which was basically asking the same thing. And she's wondering what the future might look like with regards to assessments and training and delivery and purchasing products and follow-up and maintenance in any of those three environments. Traditional, what would be our return to normal, face-to-face, everybody in the same space, some kind of blended where it's a combination of virtual and face-to-face, and then finally a full virtual. What do you guys think? Thoughts on this? Initial thoughts to kick us off. What's this going to look like?
So, Mike, I was thinking that the future is really adding where we concentrate all of our assessments on independence levels. Mm-hmm. Now we're also concentrating on safety and staff support. So how can staff provide less touchless supports to people? So you have that resource for the staff, and also just looking at safety issues for people or reasons that staff would need to intervene. Like for our homes, we've added incontinence monitors so that the staff aren't going in to check somebody all the time. It can be done remotely for them to know. So there's less hands-on, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting. And again, you're coming at it from another perspective, not in education, but as an independence in the community. But it's still the same kind of idea. It's this idea of not needing to be face-to-face with people, if not necessary. And how can we employ technology to support us a little bit?
Well, I think even though it is independence in the house and the homes, it also is going to help in those special ed classrooms because there's a lot of that care that goes on in there and a lot of that interaction. So people will be able to use those new pieces and ways of doing things in the actual classroom.
Yeah. I think so too. I think it's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been trying to kind of think and prepare for all three of the things that Barbara posed. So when I saw it come across Quiet Listserv, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, regardless of what maybe 90% of my reg ed classrooms look like, I know that there is going to be that 10% of my kiddos who have a disability who are going to not be in a traditional learning environment who were this year.
Right.
Up until COVID.
Right.
Because of their immunity, because of, you know, a parent's immunity, because their parents are hesitant, not even that they have immunity issues, but they've got other health comorbid conditions. So when thinking about that, I think they're going to be on the end of a little bit of blended maybe. Like I have a parent who's like, well, I'd send them if they were going on a field trip or, you know, to come in once a week or something. So our e-school is looking at a gigantic increase for across the board, but also for our kids with disabilities. And then more virtual learning, like we're thinking about our hospital homebound population is going to increase. And when I think about the challenges I faced in this time period, trying to provide service A and B, contemplate how I would provide evaluative service, you know, I've kind of come around some possibilities, but I just, in terms of a full-blown AT service plan, I feel like it's almost too early. Like, I mean, I have all these great ideas, you know, for scenario 1, 2, and 3, but until our district or our state has some kind of guidance, I feel like it's like fruitless for me to be like, oh, here's what I would do if, because the if and the when and the what are so very contingent on what the state and then our district decides to do.
Yeah.
I think it also too is going to play with what the individuals can do in the classrooms or in any group. Do they have the ability to social distance? Do they have the ability to understand and do the mask wearing and the personal space and the hand washing? A lot of the people we support don't have that, and I think the services for them are going to look very different.
Well, and I mean, if you think about my PT or OT services out in our school districts, like 90% of that is extremely hands-on, especially from a PT perspective. Yeah. And I mean, we've done some great teletherapy during this time, and I think some of that could absolutely continue. But for kids who are back in school, when you're working on balance, you don't want to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I've got to stand 6 feet away from you, and we'll just create an environment that if you fall, you're safe.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how do we ramp up knowing that there's such a shortage of PPE to begin with for speech, OT, and PT, let alone a classroom para and a teacher and other supports for kids who are already not super strong in maintaining their own bodily fluids, whether that's sneezing or vomiting or the other, you know, already, you know, those are the kids that are already either susceptible themselves or very good transferers of things. You know, figuring out how do we serve and support, and that's serve and support, that's not even evaluate.
Right. We haven't even gotten to evaluate yet. All these things we've just mentioned are support of services that are already existing in some way, in some form.
And I think we're going to have to figure something out, because I don't think the answer indefinitely can be we just can't do that right now.
I agree.
We put a pause button, and our DOE has guidance that, you know, if there's something you can finish, absolutely finish it. But like all of our psychological testing, all of our everything, it's just the pause button has been hit. And I just don't see how there could be a precedent for that to just go on indefinitely, even in a hybrid model.
Yeah, it can't. I mean, I think once we start moving into the summer and the fall, it just can't anymore. I agree. I think the pause has to stop at some point, but then it's going to require us as service providers to figure out what that looks like from the consumer's perspective and from our perspective of what do you feel personally comfortable with doing versus what do they feel comfortable with allowing you to do, and how does that service get done? That evaluative piece. I mean, I just think of a lot of different AT evals where you need to be able to move around a person in an environment 360 degrees to kind of soak all that in. And you don't do that the way we're doing this right now. I get one view of all of you, the front view, unless maybe you set something else up and then I can have a secondary view. But is that giving me what I need?
We've tried it. I mean, we have some kids who are complex communicators, who are either early emergent eye gaze users or two switch scanners on a device. And we've had two devices or two cameras going, and it's still very difficult. I mean, is it impossible? No, but it's still very difficult to be able to do what we would normally do in that space to get enough information to not make it more complicated. I feel like basically it drags out things getting fixed quicker because I end up having to, okay, try this and then let me know. And then I go back, instead of if I were just there, I would say, let's do this. Okay, no, that's not working. Let's do like the quick fixes that I could make right there for access are taking longer to make happen.
And because of the fact that you're not in that same space. And a right. Quick fix for access tends to be hands-on. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, we start to kind of fidget with things and we get in there and we make some change. And if we're not able to be in that space anymore, who does that? And how do we convey that information to someone else? How many times have you said, you know, I'll just do it? I can do this quickly because I know what I want to do, but for me to explain it to you might be really difficult. And so how do we have those moments of hands-on, of moving things forward so that the virtual can work? That was like a rhetorical question. I didn't have an answer and I didn't expect one. I don't know. I think these are the really interesting pieces. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were like, you know what we should get? We should get one of those swivel cameras. And if you've seen the swivel camera, it's a video camera and you can control where it points. So it kind of moves around an environment. And could that take away the lack of being in a space 360? It could potentially. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then am I able to control that remotely? A lot of times those cameras, they follow something you're wearing. So you're wearing a receiver and the camera finds that and then they kind of move in unison. So it's not always about a kind of tilt and pan remotely. It's actually about following the little pendant that you're wearing.
Would the Waze camera work? Because that you can move it on your phone around a 360.
Yeah, I think that might work. Yeah, how much is that? Do you know?
They're less expensive.
Yeah, I'm sure they're.
Yeah, it's like $40, $30, $40.
Yeah. And that might be a good solution. But then, what do I have on the consumer's end? Is I have to send them a kit that's got to be put together, and they have to set it up. And they have to troubleshoot it to get it working. And then I have to log into it. So funny. In the 90s, so we talk about technology then versus now. At the center I was in, we had a contract to provide ADA technical assistance to people remotely. And we would send them this big, giant Pelican case. And when they got this Pelican case and opened it up, big plastic case with all the padding inside, it was a phone, a video camera, a speaker, and something else that they had to plug all these pieces in when they got it. And then we would call them on this number and then it would all connect together and we could basically be in their space, which is kind of the same thing that we were just talking about. But I just remember less about what the tech looked like. It really was less about the tech, and it was more about the troubleshooting that went into getting one of those meetings to actually work was a bit exhausting for everybody involved. And I would argue that even the ones that worked, work was a relative term, and I don't know how well it actually went.
I'd love to have Marisol jump on, Mike. During this time, she has been upfitting our homes with a variety of technology and doing most of the work remotely. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting for her to jump on and see what issues she encountered.
Here she
Hello,
comes.
Everybody.
Hey, Marisol.
Hey.
This is good.
It was a bit of a struggle because we did have someone who was actually okay with entering the homes, which was our maintenance guy, and he's not tech savvy.
Well, I did do
like a live training with him. I went into one of the group homes, showed him how to hook everything up, and then I would do like Zoom. I would do the Zoom, remote, and I'm like, okay, I can see the camera, you know, do this, do that. it worked. It was just, it wasn't the easiest thing to do, but it's a little bit more difficult, especially when someone is not familiar with Zoom.
Yeah.
But I did trial out something called Help Lightning.
Okay.
Help Lightning is like you'll be able to, the person can see your virtual hand on their end, And it's just like a text message that you send to them on their phone, and they can be like, so if they needed help with the stove, you know, you can point, I'll tell them to point the camera toward the stove, and then they can see my hand, like, let's say, turning a knob. So I trialed that a couple times, and that was helpful.
It seems helpful. That does a nice job of replicating that idea of you or some tech person manipulating the environment a bit to provide some guidance and some support.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. So yeah, the tech was meant to, so the tech that you guys put in was really meant to reduce the number of face-to-face interactions between your staff and the consumers?
Well, we were concerned that when the pandemic hit the peak that we wouldn't have enough staff.
Okay.
So when we looked at minimal staff and we sat down with each home and said, what do you do for interaction with people? Like, why do you need three staff here? What are you doing? Yeah. And then when we identified each situation, we started putting technology in. So things that you would not normally put in because you have a lot of staff and you'd have to go through HRC, like door alarms and sensors and stuff like that, we put in because we may not have enough staff. And if somebody exited the building, we needed to know that they were exiting the building. And during this time, the state authorities allowed those devices to be put in because of those reasons.
Okay.
So we were allowed to install cameras into the home in case you only had one staff in. And what happens if that staff has to go to the bathroom?
Right.
Who's gonna at least try to have hands on the other people? So you had to have parameters around it, but we really identified each of the pieces that the staff, that the individual might need help with, that we might be able to put technology in place instead of that. And then of course that virtual contact with the families, with the doctors, we made sure every home was equipped with that video conferencing ability so that the individuals could talk to their families and talk to, we have an OT now that's doing, like you were saying, they're doing some visits over, our behaviorist does visits over video. So we needed to make sure all of those pieces were in place too. And there's a ton more as we're going forward that we're finding we can add.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think you hit into something that's really critical for this, is that idea of, and it's going to be tricky for me because I know the way I do an evaluation is a bit loose at times. It's going to require us to be very deliberate in every step and have a very detailed, thought out plan, because we would need to go through the steps of an assessment, just like Pam just said, and say what parts of this could be virtual, what do I need in order to do this part, what does the person need to have, and I think it also is going to require us to have a really simple, straightforward path for the consumer and their family, whoever is with them, to move through. You know, now we're gonna do step A, and if you open that up, click this link and open this up, and let's complete this together. And then we'll go through there, and then I'm going to observe something, and that's step B, so I'm going to need you to set this up. And I just think it's taking a lot of, potentially in our training and evaluation, which tends to be kind of, and maybe it is just me, kind of just free-flowing a bit. And I don't know, Alyssa, if yours are free-flowing, or if Cheryl, you guys feel like that's how yours go.
I think that they are, with some already picture in my mind, okay, if this kid is struggling with this task, these are the things I might try. But I might try like a specific assessment in using this test, and it might be a no-go, like in person. It might be like, this is not giving me what I need,
right,
or like he's not able to do it. And I have to think, okay, let me shift to plan B. So to me, it would be, how do I prepare enough ahead of time that could go, because a lot of our assessments can be done over teletherapy, but I have to have something physical in at that family's house. Right. So it's not like I can just on, you know, spur of the moment be like, oh, well, let's try this assessment, because I have to have the physical assessment protocol or whatever there already. So it would be a lot more, I'm going to drop by this kit on your front door, but yet that kit could have 15 things in it, of which we only use six.
Right. Right. But you need to be prepared to walk someone through all 15 pieces of it.
Right.
But you're right. You might find that, oh, well, these other three aren't going to really be appropriate now. And thinking about that kit and just the way that that would happen. Oof, I'm getting one of these look up into the air moments, like, oof.
Well, that's and really... I've been doing lots of like drive-by drop-offs already of devices or supports or whatever. So to me, it would be like, okay, I'm just going to tell the parents, you know, the day before, I'm going to bring out this kit, go get it, you know. And there is always a, you know, very rarely, but sometimes for our OT evals, you know, you have to be hesitant because with the standardization, if you're using a standardized assessment, there are certain things that have to be in place, and right. some of which don't involve a parent being able to see that standardized assessment prior to you giving it to them. So trying to figure out some ways to like put that in a sealed envelope and mark it, you know, would cover it with tape so they open it live. And that's what therapists are having to do in order to ensure some kind of test compliance for those standardized assessments. Right. Now, on the AT side, a lot of the assessments I do were not standardized because we don't really have.
It's more functional, like, assessment kind of stuff.
Yeah, and things like, you know, DaCoste, you know, written productivity profile, like it's hard to pre-teach that test. Yeah. You know, like if you're sending the answer sheets or the information about what they might need in person, that's still not going to allow that whoever to go through and be like, let me, you know, refresh your memory on those things, versus like a VMI where you're practicing a specific visual motor drawing. Like, I could see that being more of an issue. But most of our things, it's just thinking ahead enough to where, like, they're not dependent on me having my entire ball of tricks in that room with them. Thinking broader about how I assess.
Yeah.
And it's hard too, because when you think about the SET framework and you think about environment, like this is a whole cosmic shift of what the educational environment is. So I'm assessing, I'm doing a home evaluation instead of doing a classroom evaluation. And there's so many more variables that play into that in terms of, I don't have like a vision of what every person's home looks like.
Right.
Access.
Right. And you could argue, we could make the argument right now that any AT evaluation that was done previous to March is not as valid anymore because the environment has changed for just about everyone.
Yeah. And then do we get in the space where we're having to provide more home accommodations or home equipment because their educational environment is at home? And let's say they don't have a chair that they can sit in at home or whatever. Like, is the onus then on the educator and the school system to provide a chair for them to be able to sit in?
Right. Right. We get
when
into
traditionally
this
like the homework space was not really our domain. Like, we could make recommendations about things that would be helpful, but like that wasn't our domain before to provide equipment for.
Yeah. Which is interesting. You could look at this, if you look from the other side of it, as an employment accommodation. If you're working from home now, then you could argue that that would be an appropriate support because now your employment is at home.
Right. So if it's an ADA accommodation, that absolutely applies to the home environment. But because our law is written as an educational accommodation under IDEA, it's not super specific that says, you know, home or school. It, the only time it specifies home is when that student is on hospital homebound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a question based on that. So do you think that as if we move forward to these virtual learning environment, if we move forward to it, do you think they're going to have to, and whoever the magical they is, put in some language about your educational setting, which is home versus classroom? And I think with going back to your point about doing an evaluation, looking at the environment, we're also it's also dependent on how much the families are willing to share. You know,
sure.
And I get that. Some families are not going to want to share all of the information necessarily about the environment, and right. I respect yeah. that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And but in order, you know, are there going to be a lot of disclaimers in these AT evaluations of, based on the information that was provided to me, these are the recommendations that could be made? Because yeah. if and you don't have
from a liability perspective, that kind of worries me as an OT to think, well, if I can't see where they are this whole time and I recommend this or that and it's not the appropriate thing, and then they fall, like,
right. right.
So yeah. I think there are going to have to be some disclaimers. And I think at a federal level, there's going to have to be some kind of, from, you know, from the DOE, like, there's going to have to be some kind of document that we don't want to amend, you know, IDEA. We don't want to change it, but there has to be some kind of a service provision under virtual learning support document, an FAQ. In our state, we have technical assistance papers.
Yeah.
Something that guides the practice right now, because instead of it being this, we just have this short-term thing. This is not going to be short-term, you know. We're kind of predicting and looking at, do we start our school year a little early and then basically send our kids on break from the middle of November through January, and just right. when that second wave is supposed to hit Florida? I think there's everything's on the table, and because it's such a different time, I'm hoping that there is some kind of federal, which then leads to some kind of state, like, guidance paper. I don't know what else to call it, because
yeah.
I don't
know. Well, I think that's a good thing to call it. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think this time shift is going to potentially impact what happens. Going back to what Cheryl said, I've already made a note that if I do an eval from now on for the foreseeable future, I got to figure out some kind of disclaimer that's got to go in there. It has to be. Even if it's as simple as saying, due to the nature of our shifting environments, this evaluation needs to be revisited, and maybe put some kind of arbitrary time frame on that. Like, it needs to be revisited in 3 months. Because, you know, we always say to people, your AT assessment, your needs should be reevaluated occasionally. But what does that mean, really? It gets evaluated when someone complains a lot or when some big change happens. But before that, it doesn't really. But now maybe we'll need to be a little bit more explicit of, like, no, I'm saying to you, for what the information I had, kind of like Cheryl said, the information I had, the methods I was able to use to determine your need, I'm telling you that we need to revisit this in a short period of time and look again. Because I think all of these things, I still feel like some of these ideas that we're still coming up with, they're getting us towards a point we could do some of this. I don't know if they're getting us there yet, though. And I don't know what would get us there. I don't know. I think these little pieces, and I think Cheryl's right, where, you know, what are people willing to give up information-wise? And we've already said in the beginning, in order for us to be best prepared to meet this virtual need, we're going to need a lot more information to be able to make a plan and have a roadmap and find a way to stick to it as we do these evaluations in our magical kit that just shows up. And these people have to kind of unfold it. I always think of, like, the cartoon where they open a briefcase and the entire house pops out of it. That's what I envision this AT kit's going to look like when it shows up at somebody's house. But, you know, there's a concern that kit can't look too complex either, because that will then shut people down. Like, if I pop that open and I'm remembering just this 90s kit that we used to send to these other organizations, and if you weren't a tech person, this was a scary suitcase to show up in front of your building, because it had wires and batteries and cords and plugs and pieces and parts. And it was kind of, and everything ended up being color-coded with dots and colors, and this goes here, and then you do this. And it made us really think about that kind of IKEA model of how to put something together, right?
Mike, and also sort of is going to lend toward the future of knowledge and requirements for hiring. So people are going to want to make sure that they have tech-savvy people on board in order to deal with this in the future, because we all stumbled with all of this when we had houses with no tech knowledge inside that house.
Right. Yeah. So now you're right. You're asking for a whole other skill set of someone. And, you know, if we're looking at doing an evaluation, whether the person's in a group home, living at home, wherever they are, you're asking an awful lot of the people that surround that person. Whether they're family members or staff members, whoever they are, you're asking a lot from them about how they might do this and provide some support. And that's the part that really concerns me.
I think in that regard, Mike, too, the training component is going to look so different. And how do you train people who weren't the primary support people in that in the same role in a way that's effective for everyone? I think the training will look a lot different.
I think so, too. I mean, this idea of providing enough support to get us maybe through an eval is one thing. But then to make a decision, provide some equipment. We haven't even talked about what that looks like, how to, you know, provide equipment and get it there and set it up initially. But then you're teaching someone pretty deeply how to use things that they've never used before. And you're asking them to expand their tech savviness. Sorry, I couldn't resist. How are we going to do that remotely? I think that's really going to be interesting. Because it's a whole other thing. This idea of, you know, and I look at the list that Barbara came up with after training, you know, it's delivery, purchases, follow-up, and maintenance, all those things. I'm sure we've all seen cases where someone has had a device break, and I'll air quote break because it probably could be something very simple, but what happens, it derails the tech solution for months. I always go back to the story of one of the guys I worked with who just lost the cord for his device and didn't realize it was the same cord that was on his phone. He could have used the same cord. He just stopped using the device. And then when I followed up and he said, well, I haven't used that thing in weeks because the cord got lost. And so there was a breakdown there. And now we're asking people to be their own tech support, in addition to being someone who's learning something new in order to be independent.
And I've absolutely already seen that already in the last couple of months. Like, it's not doing this, where ordinarily I'd be like, either send me a screenshot or, you know, or I'll come by the school the next whatever, because the it's not doing whatever is not always a great description. Right. And it's heightened my desire for there to be way more virtual access into devices. There's a lot of devices out there that have that capability and a lot that don't. Mm-hmm. And so being able to do a lot of those virtual things instead of like, I'm gonna hold my phone up, which is on the, you know, Zoom or whatever call to the device and try to show you at the same time. Like, right. And I can send a video back, but I'm not gonna ask my person to screen record unless they're already tech savvy. But it's delayed a lot of the things that I think we'd be able to address in terms of problem solving. It's definitely delayed those problem solving, much less the implementation and like actual use, because it's like could take 4 days to get enough information to make a recommendation about something to try for that then person to get back to me to then say yes it did or didn't work, or to say it only kind of worked, and then I can send another video that should, you know, you can see the trail of my last couple of months.
Yeah, right. And just listen to all those steps that had to go in to get you to the same point that you would have been at if you guys were in the same space. Mm-hmm. Relatively quickly, probably. I'm not saying always, but probably. And so again, it goes back to this issue of physical space and how do we replicate that virtually or in this blended world, or, you know, the level of comfort that someone might have with you going to their place but standing outside the door. You know, I was talking to somebody about that last week. Like, I'm going to go. It was a teacher. She was going to go to the student's house and just stand outside their front window. And the parents were going to walk her through what was happening. It certainly was a better plan than having 10 different emails back and forth and probably video recording of screens and stuff like that. So I guess it probably worked better in that sense. But is that really a long-term solution? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know what the long-term solution is, but when I think about it, it kind of wants my head to explode.
Yeah.
When I think about trying to support a district, and we're not a huge district. We're, you know, 30,000 kids, but like when it's 1.5 or 1.75 of us trying to make that support in terms of personnel, and when we could go to a school and conquer, you know, 7 or up to 20 kids in a, you know, a single site visit, the individual going to house visits, just it kind of, once makes my head want to explode.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's why we've been waiting and pushing this conversation, because it's a head exploder.
We don't want to have it.
It's right. But I don't see any path going forward for the near future that doesn't involve the three options on that slide right there. Traditional, blended, or virtual. I think there's going to be some form of all of that happening. And so what does that mean? Like, we do all the evaluations when we have that face-to-face time, and then when it goes into the virtual, we just go into a standby mode again?
You write your reports.
Yeah, it's when you write all your reports, right? Exactly. Unfortunately, the writing of the reports tends to lead to the equipment purchase and the delivery and the setup, which is still we haven't kind of figured out. But, you know, it is really hard to figure out. This is the kind of thing that I've been sitting and kind of staring up at the ceiling thinking about. Because I know people are going to start to ask, just like this message came out, just like we started having this conversation last week. There's only so long we can do a holding pattern, which is basically what we've been doing. And so at some point, if you think about the holding pattern that we're in right now, has been doing a bit of a disservice to people whose needs have probably changed because their environment has changed. But we haven't had a mechanism to provide them another level of support. It's all been kind of trials. Maybe you try this, and then we'll get back together and see what it looks like. And I'll give you some training on how to do this, and you try it, and then we'll talk about it. I feel like I've done a lot of that, but I don't know if I've done a lot of systematic kind of planning and what I would call true evaluative service. I just don't think I have. I know I haven't. It's not even a question of I think, it's I know.
Well, I think from the big picture, what we've been trying to do is say, okay, how can we beef up what our on-demand training resources are, internally made and externally sourced, so that, like, for kids who, what they need to know is accessing Snap and Read. Okay, great. That's not me meeting with them. Maybe in the end, that's meeting with them to refine things, but here's 5 things you can do. Try first.
Right.
So I think for some of the bigger, you know, the higher incidence disabilities, and even, you know, some of the basic, like, here's how you model for AAC, trying to get more of those on-demand resources done so that we can refer people there first, so that some forward progress can happen while we're trying to do the other.
Yeah, and it's all kind of just in time support is what it is. It's all right, how can I get this library of just in time support to keep you going? But then, you know, and with those, that would be great. But you know, I'll ask any one of you: do you feel like you have time right now to create an on demand library of things? I don't feel like I do.
I'm squeezing time.
Yeah. I mean,
some of it has happened authentically because I've had 2 or 3 teachers that have said, hey, can you send us another video about how you have a student log in and add the Chrome extension? okay, great. Like, I can send you a video. Oh, and by the way, since I've already made that video for you, when I make it, I'm going to make it very broadly so that it's not, hey, Joe, when your students want to log in, it's I can repurpose it to be part of the on-demand resources. That doesn't always work, but that's been, I've tried to do that because, yeah, we're in the day.
Yeah, we're in the day. And some of it has been mining YouTube for things that already exist and playlisting that together for people. And that's helped. How to use your voice assistant, how to do these kinds of things, how to put Chrome extensions in, what are your built-in accessibility features, you know, those kinds of things, pointing towards materials that are already out there so I don't necessarily have to create that from scratch. Yeah, look at this, an hour and we haven't solved the problem yet. Why is that? I don't understand how that happened.
Because it's one of those things that's more than an hour conversation.
I know.
And as soon as we make a good plan, something about our scenario will change and we'll have to reevaluate the entire thing.
Yes. Yeah. We should maybe start our list of 91 questions for AT service delivery. I like that it's 91. I'm a big fan of that it's 91. But maybe that's what we need. All right, I think we'll revisit this next week too. I think we'll continue talking about that because I think this is where, as this year winds down for schools, but as this kind of first wave winds down, do we start thinking about the plan of what it looks like going forward in our new kind of blended reality of where we're going to be providing service. All right. I don't know. Anybody else thoughts before we go? Look at that. I feel like we left on a downer. I felt very like, I don't know. I just don't have the answers.
I think in this environment, the more you, we were just talking about it at work, looking at reopening our day programs, which are a nightmare. The more you get into, the more complex it gets.
Yeah.
So it's like a dark hole that just keeps getting deeper and deeper.
It is. And that when I read that 91 questions list that I showed you guys before, he started it with kind of a basic, like, should we go virtual or not? And then it just dove deep. And like every question led to two others, which led to two others. And it just kept going. And it's the same idea. Is that suddenly you're neck deep in it and you're like, wow, this is really complex.
So I think it's important, Mike, like what you're doing is bringing people together, because I think the more we share, it's going to allow us to go faster instead of each of us thinking of the 91 questions all by ourselves.
Exactly.
For
without
every situation.
A doubt. Yeah, so true. And that's the bonus of these kinds of conversations. Is this constant talking about it just helps people, you know, just flesh out some ideas. And then you start layering that information onto your other questions and see how that changes it. I think expect to see this exact same slide next week. And we'll just talk about this one more time. We'll review again and we'll continue on this path for this discussion. I think it's powerful.
Mike, have you thought to include parents or family members or people who are providing some of the support at home who have had either, you know, successes or may have some insight? I don't know, it's just a thought.
We kind of throw this out. I mean, this is about as loose as it gets. We throw it out on Twitter and whoever shows up. I have pointed it out to some parent groups that I've been part of and said, hey, we do this and you're welcome to join. I don't think we've had any parents pop in. It's mostly been professionals, but I think that could be helpful. Yeah, I think those are the voices we need. We need the parents. We need the individuals with disabilities. We need to hear what they think about as this goes forward.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, go forward and do good. Anyway, that was our positive end. And we'll revisit this again next week.
All right.
Okay, great.
All right, everybody. Thanks. It was good seeing you guys.
Good seeing you too.
Mike, I have a question for you after you stop the recording.
All right. Wait, let me stop it and then.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Do you have an idea for a future episode? Leave an audio message via SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/ITS podcast with your suggestion. It may appear on an upcoming episode. To stay current on all things inclusive, and assistive technology, follow Mike on Twitter at MMATP and visit his website at MMATP.com for inclusive technology resources and all the previous podcast episodes.